Welcome. I think it's always interesting to look back at technology over the years and see how it's evolved over a relatively short period of time. This past weekend, I was on a website called evolt.org. I don't know if you're familiar with it. On evolt.org, you can download old versions of just about any browser that's ever existed. And I was downloading old versions of Internet Explorer. And I was actually able to get IE4 running side by side with IE9, which was kind of cool. I've even got an AOL website from 1998. And as I was looking, comparing and contrasting the old version of the browser with the new, I was also looking at old versions of Mosaic, Netscape. And it's interesting, when you look at old versions of browsers, and then you look at the new versions, in a sense, you could say that the browser is basically the same thing. It's a frame, it's got navigation, and it's got the place where you put the websites. At the same time, we know that over a relatively short period of time, the web and the way we use the web have changed in a pretty dramatic way. The amount of time that we spend on the web has gone through the roof. The way that websites look has changed pretty dramatically. The way that we interact with websites has changed. And it's these changes that we've seen in the web in a relatively short period of time that have actually made us go back and rethink the browser from the ground up. And so that's one of the things I'm going to be talking about today. The idea that with the web browser, we're actually going back to a blueprint and, in a sense, starting back over. As Christoph said, I'm Ari Bixhorn. I'm on the Internet Explorer team in the Sunshine Capital of the United States, Redmond, Washington. It's great to not be in Redmond, and it's great to be kicking off today's Tech Days. Christoph's put together an awesome event along with the team, and I have the opportunity to open the event with a discussion of Microsoft's investments in Internet Explorer and HTML5. In particular, we're going to talk about three things this morning. First, we'll set some context. We'll talk about the background of Internet Explorer 9, and we'll talk about why Microsoft invests in a browser in the first place. We'll talk about the design goals for Internet Explorer 9, and we'll talk about how we built Internet Explorer 9 in a way that's different than ways that we built the browser in the past. The next thing we'll do is talk about where the business is today. And I think the best way to do this is just to take the product through its paces. So I've got a few demos of IE9, some of the new websites that people have built using HTML5. And then I will show some of the IT Pro features of IE9 as well, so the IEAK and the Security Compliance Manager. And then from there, we'll take a look ahead, and I'll give you a quick view of the latest release of IE that we're working on right now, IE10, walk you through a couple of demos of the latest platform preview of IE10 that we launched about 3 weeks ago. And so at the end of the keynote, you'll have sort of a broad understanding of Microsoft's investments in IE, where the business is today, and where we're going in the future. Ever since I joined the IE team, I've gotten this question quite a bit. Why does Microsoft build a web browser in the first place? It's a reasonable question because we don't make money on the browser, and yet at the same time, it's an incredibly important business for us to be in. The simple reason that we build IE is because the vast majority of people's time on a Windows PC is spent in the browser. If you look back just a couple of years ago, it was about 50% of the time people spent on their Windows PC in the web browser. Now that number is up to between 60 and 65%, and it's expected to continue to increase. So it's in Microsoft's best interest to build the thing where people are going to be spending the majority of their time on a Windows PC. And that's why today we've got about 200 developers, testers, PMs, and a couple of marketers that basically eat, breathe, sleep, and live IE. In addition to the core engineering and marketing teams, we've also got a dedicated group of people in our trustworthy computing team. The TWC team is basically a cross-company organization that looks at best practices for security, for privacy, for product reliability. And there's a dedicated team in our TWC organization that focuses specifically on IE as well. So it's an incredibly important business for us to be in, and I think if you look at the importance of the web today, there's never been a more important time for us to be investing in IE. So what did we set out to build with Internet Explorer 9? One of the things that we wanted to do is obviously build on top of the previous versions that we've released. Now, I love nostalgia, so if you'll humor me for a moment, let's take a step back in time and just look at the past 8 versions of Internet Explorer. I've got my old school slides to do it with. IE1, we launched it in August of 1995. Any guess as to how many people were on the IE team when we launched IE1? 6. 6 people. So we had 6 people, that was the entire Internet Explorer 1 team, and it shipped as part of the Plus Pack for Windows 95. I'm sure some of you remember the Plus Pack. What was interesting is that those 6 people shipped version 2 just 3 months later. So in November of 95, we shipped IE2. We incorporated functionality for SSL, first release that supported HTML3, first release that supported cookies, and we also supported VRML, Virtual Reality Modeling Language, in IE2. In 96, we shipped IE3, supported CSS to a certain extent. With IE3, the big thing was we supported better add-ins with ActiveX controls and with Java applets. And then over the years, in 97, we shipped IE4. One of the big things that we included in IE4 was group policy support, and we'll actually see a demo that incorporates group policy in just a minute. IE5, my personal favorite release, it was when we first included support for XML HTTP request, which sort of laid the foundation for AJAX, even though we weren't calling it AJAX at the time. Everyone knows what came after IE5, right? Your favorite version? IE6, yes. We get a round of applause for IE6, everyone's favorite version. One guy. Thank you. Thank you, Christoph. Okay, so say what you will about IE6. One thing that we shipped in IE6 that was cool, that we'll take a look at in a second, was the IEAK. But anyway, moving on to IE7. We took a few years off, then we shipped IE7 in 2006. IE8, for the first time, we shipped smart screen anti-phishing technology, and that was in 2009. All right, thank you for going back on that little nostalgic trip with me. So with IE9, one of the things that we wanted to do is build on top of the work that we had done in previous versions. At the same time, we wanted to take a step back and say, look, across those 8 versions that we've shipped, what are some of the things that haven't changed that we now have the opportunity to change? For as long as we can remember, there's been a pretty big rift that has existed between web apps and client apps, right? With web apps, you get standard support, helps you do cross-device development. With client apps, you optimize more for performance and a richer UI. And if you look at where we are now, we definitely need the best of both of these, right? We've got more form factors than ever, so we need the ability to build apps that run cross-device. And at the same time, our expectations for performance and UI are higher than they've ever been before. So with IE9, we had the opportunity to bring these two worlds together to a certain extent. And there were two things that enabled that. The first is HTML5. With HTML5, we take a big step forward in terms of the functionality that's available to us natively on the web. The second enabler was this idea of hardware acceleration. The idea that from within the browser, for the first time, we could reach into the underlying graphics subsystem, in the case of Windows, it's DirectX, and take advantage of those underlying graphics and the GPU, or the graphics processing unit, to get more performance and better graphics than we've ever had before. So with IE9, we built it from the ground up on HTML5 and hardware acceleration. to enable us to build interoperable apps that run really fast. We'll see an example of that in just a second. Now, on top of that, we also redesigned the IE UI. We wanted to make the UI for IE a lot cleaner so that you could focus more on the websites and see less of the web browser. And last but not least, we wanted to build on the investments that we had in security and privacy in previous versions. When we talk about safety in IE9, we're talking primarily about two things. Investments that we've made in our smart screen technology, like application reputation, and also some new work that we've done around privacy with tracking protection. We introduced tracking protection lists, which basically allows you to have more control over what information you share with third-party tracking services. So these are the design goals of IE9: interoperability, speed, a clean UI, and a safe experience. So that's why we build a browser and what we set out to build. Now, how did we go about building IE9? Did we basically just take those 200 devs, testers, and PMs and lock them in a room and slide pizza under the door three times a day until they came out with a product? Yes. Yes, we did. In addition to that, though, we heard pretty loud and clear from previous versions that while we were building IE9, the community, in particular developers, wanted us to have more frequent releases of the browser so that you could see where we were going and you could start prototyping apps based on early releases of the product. So about a year ago, in March of 2010, we shipped the first platform preview of IE9. And the platform preview was basically just a frame and the rendering engine. Didn't have any navigation, didn't have a lot of the functionality that we shipped in the final product, but it gave developers an opportunity to see what standards we were supporting, get a sense for some of the improvements that we were making in our performance, and also start prototyping apps against the product. Over the course of the next year, we shipped 7 additional platform previews. And we shipped them about every 8 to 10 weeks. We found that to be a good cadence for doing these releases. The reason is that when we were shipping every 8 to 10 weeks, it gave us an opportunity to make substantial improvements in the product from build to build. So we could improve things like our JavaScript compilation performance, we could make some notable improvements in our ACID3 test scores, and we could also support a broader range of the HTML5 standard. Over the course of that time, those 200 developers, testers, and PMs got almost 23,000 pieces of feedback. And that feedback really helped drive the development of the product. It was based on that feedback that we accelerated our development of things like HTML5 Canvas, HTML5 audio and video. We accelerated development of our WAF fonts based on the feedback, CSS3 2D transformations. It also informed the work that we did on tracking protection lists. So we created this really good feedback loop throughout the development of IE9. We're going to continue that as we move forward with IE10. All right, so that's a quick intro as to why we build a browser, what we set out to build with IE9, and how we went about building the product. Let's take a look at the product itself, and we'll begin with a tour of the IE9 UI. Go ahead and close these. And I'm going to fire up a new instance of IE9. Got the old AOL website here. Let's go to the Killers website. The Killers is a band. They've got a nice, clean HTML5 website that demos nicely when you want to show the IE9 UI. So a couple of things to call out with the UI. The first is the amount of space taken up by the browser window up at the top of the screen. Our team spent a lot of time reducing the amount of space it's taken up by the browser. The basic idea there is not only are websites getting more and more complex, but for different form factors, we want to maximize the amount of space that can be taken up by the website itself. So our UX team spent a lot of time reducing pixel by pixel the amount of space taken up by the browser. And if you install the latest builds of Chrome, Firefox, and IE, you'll see that IE takes up the least amount of space. This idea of letting the browser take a back step or take a sort of fade into the background so that you focus on the websites is one of the things that our UX team really focused on with IE9. You'll notice that the browser window is set in this semi-transparent glass. And the idea there is, again, to keep the focus on websites and take the focus off of the web browser. Now, what else did we do to put the focus on websites? Well, Christoph mentioned that we can now pin websites to the taskbar just as we can any client application. Let's take a look at that. So here I've got an instance of Facebook up and running. And if I want to pin Facebook to my taskbar, I can either click on the tab or I can click on the fav icon here and simply drag and drop it onto my taskbar. Now, when I do that, three things happen. One is Facebook is now permanently pinned to my taskbar. Number two, you'll notice that IE9 actually takes on the look and feel of Facebook. So we've got the Facebook icon here, and we've got the Facebook coloring in the buttons. And the third thing that happens is I get jump list functionality. So I can add jump lists to my website just as I could for any other client application. So I can jump directly to my news, my messages, my events, my friends. And these jump lists can either be static, as we see here with Facebook, or they can be dynamic. And we've seen a number of websites implement dynamic websites, websites like Groupon, where you've got changes happening on a day-to-day basis to deals that are offered. They can have those be dynamically updated on a daily basis or on an hourly basis. Another thing that you get with pinned sites is the ability to do notifications. So just like today within Outlook, when I get a new email, I can get that little Outlook notification pop. When I pin a website, I can get a notification there. And Facebook has implemented this. Let me show you how that works. I've got one instance of Facebook here. I'm going to bring up another instance of Facebook in Firefox. And you can see we've got me logged in here. And on this instance of Facebook, I'm logged in as my brother, Bruno Tiberius McNulty Bixhorn. You can tell he got the looks in the family. And so what Bruno is going to do is he is going to send me a new message. Let me go ahead and minimize this. Send it to Ari Bixhorn, subject, yo, when are you going to finish that website you're building me? Now, when I hit send, watch the Facebook icon in the taskbar. I get a notification icon saying that I've got a new message. So although it's a website, it feels a lot more like a client application in terms of how I launch it, what the website actually looks like, and then how I can interact with it with things like notifications. I'm just curious, how many folks have built pinned websites? A couple of you. Do you want to build one really quick right now? All right, I'm going to build one anyway. Okay, let's go ahead and build a pinned website. I want to show you how easy it is. And let me just see. Does anyone have a stopwatch? You've got a stopwatch? Okay. Let's see how long it's going to take me to build a pinned website basically from scratch. Let me just get a couple of things set up, and I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do before I do it. First of all, I'm going to build pinning functionality for the website that I'm building for my brother, okay? So this is the nice website that I'm building for my brother, Bruno. He's a music recording artist, and I've just started work on a website that he's going to use to help organize his music recordings. As you can tell, this is an alpha release of the website. So what we're going to do is build pinning functionality into this. I'm going to do three things. I'm going to create a fav icon that's going to show up here, here, and also down here in the taskbar. The second thing I'm going to do is I'm going to change the navigation button colors to something different. And the third thing I'm going to do is build jump list functionality like we saw in Facebook. Okay? And I bet I can do that in under, let's say, 3 minutes. If I can do this in under 3 minutes, every one of you gets to buy me a beer. That sound reasonable? If I don't do it in under 3 minutes, every one of you gets to buy me two beers. That's the deal. All right. So When your stopwatch is ready, let's begin. Go. The first thing I'm going to do is create my fave icon. And I've gone to xiconeditor.com. I'm going to upload a picture of my brother Bruno and set that as my fave icon for the site. When I click OK, that pops into the icon. I'm going to export that. And I'm going to save this to my, my documents library sounds good. Once that fave icon has been saved, I'm going to go to my documents library. I'm going to grab that fave icon. I'm going to go back to my directory where I've got the website, and I will add that fave icon to the directory. From there, I'm going to create a copy of this file, which is what we're going to be editing. How's timing? Okay. Still a lot to do. I'm going to call this default basil5.htm. Then I'm going to launch an instance of, I'm going to launch an instance of Visual Web Developer Express 2010. I'm going to drag and drop Basil 5 into Web Dev Express. And here you can see my glorious website. The first thing I'm going to do is add that fave icon. I'll add that as a shortcut icon, and the link will be to faveicon.ico. Okay. Time check? 1:30. Okay. So now I'm going to change the color of the navigation buttons. I'm going to say meta name equals MS application, nav button color, content. Bruno's favorite color is black. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Does that look right? Okay. And then finally, I'm going to add a quick jump list. We're going to call this meta name equals msapplication.task. Content equals, I'm going to name the task rap, since my brother's a rapper. The action URI is going to just, for now, I'll just set it to this directory. This is the link that we'll actually be linking to. And icon. The icon URI is going to be set to faveicon.ico. Time check? 2:30. I've got news for you. I'm already done. Thank you very much. Now, I didn't say it was going to work. I just said I was going to finish in under 3 minutes. Let's go ahead and save this. I'll save this out to the same directory. It's denying me access. So I will save this. Where else should I save it to? I will save it to my documents library, and then I will copy it back. I'm glad that I stopped the clock before I started doing this. All right, so we're going to grab that from my docs library. I'm going to copy it back into the directory, move and replace. And now, when I reopen IE9, I'm going to go to localhost and Basil 5, which is what we just created. Now what you'll notice is that when I go to this website, I've got the fave icon here in the tab. I've got it here. And in theory, when I drag it down to the taskbar, I get the high-resolution fave icon in the taskbar, I get the black button color, and I get my jump list for wrap. It's pretty cool. So really, in less than 5 minutes, you can get basic site pinning functionality. And you know, there are a couple of reasons to do site pinning. One is you get more eyeballs onto your site. If you can get someone to pin your website to the taskbar, that's great real estate for your site, whether it's a public website or a corporate intranet site. The other reason is that we found that when people pin sites, people have a higher level of engagement. So we've been working with a bunch of different partners who are now pinning their websites, folks like High Five, Huffington Post, and they're seeing upwards of like 2 times the amount of engagement from people who pin the websites. So it's easy to do, and it has the opportunity to give you more engagement on your site. All right, so that was a quick look at the IE9 UI and the ability to do site pinning and get some better integration with the Windows taskbar. Now, we were talking about HTML5. Let's look at a few examples where we can see just some cool examples of what people have done using HTML5 and IE9. The first site I'm going to launch is Foursquare. And Foursquare created this cool new 3D experience entirely in HTML5. It's called Foursquare Playground. Let me go ahead and log in here. And what Foursquare Playground allows me to do is get a 3D view of my Foursquare world. So if I zoom out here, you'll see I've got my icon here, and each of these buildings around me is a different venue inside of Foursquare. Different types of venues have different looking buildings, and the height of the building represents how many people have checked into the building. You also see that, actually, this is interesting to point out, it's actually found my location. That's because Foursquare is taking advantage of HTML5's geolocation support. And so basically what I've done when I first loaded this site is I gave Foursquare permission to find my location so it knows where I am. And we can see we're right next to the Swiss Hotel. We've got the Congress Center. And you'll see here at the Congress Center, there's that little bouncing ball with the number 3 on it. That's the number of people who are actually checked in on Foursquare right now. And so if I click on that site or on that building, it'll zoom in on the building, and I can actually see the people who are checked in here. It's pretty cool. If there are any tips, there are no tips for this particular location. We can see who the mayor of the venue is. Let me just see if there's a place that shows tips here. Yeah, so when people have left tips when they check into a site, you can see those as well. And when people take photos of a site, we don't have it in this example. I'm not sure if another one might have it. Let me just see. Yeah, no examples with pictures right now. If someone has taken a picture here and included that in their check-in, you'll actually see that posted up on the wall, which is pretty cool. So we can zoom around in this virtual world. And again, this is done all entirely using HTML5. You get this nice, rich experience. It takes advantage of geolocation. You get a nice 3D view into Foursquare that creates a much more engaging view of this of Foursquare's website. Now, that's just some basic HTML5. I talked earlier about hardware acceleration and the way that hardware acceleration allows you to get better performance and better graphics directly in the browser in a native way. Let me launch Kung Fu Master of the Web. Kung Fu is a, let me just make sure I've got my sound on here. Okay. Got to get the full effect of the game here. So Master of the Web is a game that's built entirely in HTML5, and it takes advantage of hardware acceleration. So let me just show you the game. We'll click through the opening screens. Basically, the goal of the game is to catch the eggs that the old man is throwing at you before they hit you in the face. Okay. So I catch an egg and I drop it in the bowl. Okay. As you can see, I need a little bit of practice at this game. Now, when I hopefully catch this next egg, check out everything that's happening on the screen, right? There are the leaves falling from the sky. There are little glowing things rising up from the grass. And, of course, there are the eggs flying at me at high speeds. Okay. I completed the lesson with only catching, like, 2 eggs. So there's a lot happening on the screen there, and that's actually putting a fair amount of tax on my laptop in terms of workload. But the reason that you saw such good performance in the graphics is because the website and IE9 are taking advantage of hardware acceleration. So in the past, IE and other browsers only took advantage of the CPU in the laptop. And with IE9, we start to take advantage of the GPU, where a lot of the processing functionality is locked away. Based on that, we can get much better performance. Now, let me show you the same site running in the latest build of Chrome. There we go. And you'll notice that the site is choppier, and I can actually catch the eggs. Now, here's the thing. Hardware acceleration isn't a binary on or off thing. There are different types of hardware acceleration, and there's different amounts of hardware acceleration that you can support. Okay. We talk about four different kinds of hardware acceleration: graphics, audio, video, and text. And in IE9, we support all four kinds of hardware acceleration. When you check out sites that have that need hardware acceleration and you try them in Firefox or Chrome, your results will vary because of the amount of hardware acceleration that Chrome and Firefox support. This particular site looks okay in Firefox, doesn't look so great in Chrome. You'll find other sites, vice versa. But what we wanted to do in IE9 is make sure that we've got the deepest and broadest support for hardware acceleration across the board. All right, a little bit more nostalgia here. HTML5 Pac-Man. If you haven't seen this site, this is awesome. Namco just launched the world's biggest Pac-Man site in honor of Pac-Man's 30th birthday. Basically what this is a virtual world of different Pac-Man screens. And it actually supports user-generated content. So you can upload your own Pac-Man scene. And then you can play each Pac-Man scene. All right. And you'll notice when I go from one screen to the next, it's going to take me to the next Pac-Man world, which is kind of cool. So it's an endless world of Pac-Man games. And I could sit up here playing this for the rest of the keynote. Because I love Pac-Man. There we go. So this site, again, is built entirely in HTML5. What's cool about this site is that it supports a broad range of... What is that guy doing? This site supports a broad range of HTML5 technology. So it's got HTML5 audio. It supports HTML5 canvas. It takes advantage of WAF fonts. And of course, you can see it's also got, like the other sites, the high resolution fav icon and the we need to work on the computer here a little bit. It's a little slow today. So we've got the good sound effects and everything. It's another cool example of using HTML5 to build a pretty cool, engaging site. Now, if most of you are like me, you're huge Bon Jovi fans. Just me? Okay. Who would have thought that Bon Jovi would have made such a comeback? They were big in the 80s, they died down for a little while, and now they're back. This is a cool website called Bon Jovi Director's Cut, and the thing that it highlights from an HTML5 perspective is HTML5 video hardware acceleration. What we're looking at here is a Bon Jovi concert that was recorded from multiple different angles. Okay, so we've got 11 different videos here playing simultaneously. And what we can do is create a custom music video using these. So I'm going to click on one camera angle, and I'm going to drag it into the frame here. I'll click on this one and drag it in. I'll click on this and drag it in. And I can just select different scenes to create a custom music video. I think this is the drummer. Got to show the drummer some love, because drummers get no respect. And then I will finish off there. So I've created this custom video, and then what I can do is add some styling to it so we can get these sort of grainy effects here. I'll drag that in. We can layer multiple effects on top of each other, so I can do that. I've got this sort of weird effect that I'll drop in here. And then when I hit play, you'll see that we start playing that custom video. And then we change the effect. Sing a song for the broken hearted. And this is just HTML5 video running natively in the browser, which is pretty cool. All right, so hardware acceleration in a number of different ways. Hardware acceleration of graphics, hardware acceleration of video. Let me show you one other example of a pretty cool site that was recently built in HTML5. The site is called SVG Girl. And HTML5 includes support for SVG, scalable vector graphics. It's a text-based language for describing images using vector graphics. And what one of our partners did is they built an entire animation using SVG. So, you know, SVG is typically used for things like engineering diagrams, but what they wanted to do is push the limits of what's possible with SVG animation. So let me go ahead and just show you first. Bear with me one moment. Okay. This looks like a video, but it's actually SVG animation. So what you're seeing here is hundreds of SVG objects that are being animated together at about 10 to 15 frames per second, which is pretty cool. And what we can do with this site is we can actually update the way that the animation renders. So I can click Edit Animation, and I can do something just to show that it's not a video. I can click on the girl's skin, and I can make it a nice bluish color here. And then I can regenerate the animation with that update made to that particular SVG graphic. And this is why I'm not on the UX team. But it's really cool to see what you can do with SVG graphics and the way that you can really push the limits with it in terms of this animation. All right. So these are some consumer websites that have been built for IE9 and HTML5. Let's take a quick look at a couple of IT Pro features that we ship as part of IE9. And so what I'm going to do is bring up my virtual machine here, drop it into full screen mode, and want to walk you through two things really quickly. One is the IEAK, the IE Admin Kit. This allows you to deploy IE and customize it when you're rolling it out across your business. Just to give you a sense of the functionality that we provide in the AK. So we'll start off, it's all wizard functionality, and so I'll start off just by specifying where I want the install file for IE to go. I can specify which platform I want to deploy IE9 on. In this case, we'll just accept the default. We can select a target language, and we can do multiple languages. I'll keep that as the default right now. And we can specify how we want to do the deployment. For most people, they'll just select file. But if you want, you can do CD-ROM-based distribution or config-only package. This is one you probably won't use all that often. This is if people already have IE9 installed and you want to overwrite their settings. There are better ways to do that, and so typically we don't do that in the IEAK. Now here is where I get to select all of the different things that I want to customize for my IE9 install. And basically, the checkboxes that I select here will influence the following screens that I walk through in the wizard. So let me deselect a number of these just for the purposes of the demo. And then as I start going through the wizard, let me just synchronize my install files here to make sure I've got the latest build of IE9. And now I can start customizing the way that install is going to look and feel. I've got the opportunity to make sure that as part of the install, we're grabbing the latest updates. I can set whether I want to allow the user to choose to set IE as their default browser or not. We can do an interactive installation, or chances are when you're rolling this out, you're probably going to want to do hands-free. The difference between hands-free installation and silent installation is that with silent installation, you won't see the progress boxes at all. With the hands-free installation, you'll see the progress boxes, but the user won't be prompted to make any choices. You can customize the title bar, so if we want the title to say Internet Explorer brought to you by 20.ch, we can do that. And then I can customize what search providers the users will have access to out of the box. By default, you can import the search providers that you've already got in IE9 installed on this machine. And I think for now I've just got Bing installed, but if you've got Google or Yahoo or Wikipedia or even a corporate intranet search provider, when you import those, they'll be imported into the wizard. You can customize the homepage if you want to set it to your corporate intranet site. You can add accelerators. So one of the things that we've seen some corporations do is have the ability to right-click on text or an object in the browser window, right-click and share it using SharePoint. There's an accelerator to do that. And then we can customize favorites, the favorites bar, and any feeds. So this is just a quick example of the IEAK. If you haven't had a chance to check it out, I highly recommend that you do it. It's a good, easy way to customize your install of IE to make sure that users within your business have a good install experience out of the box. Now, once you've rolled out IE in the business, how do you then make sure that people are going to comply with various security policies that you've set up? We've got something called the Microsoft Security Compliance Manager, or SCM. And with SCM, we ship a set of baseline security policies for Internet Explorer. So if I go into the IE9 tree here, you'll see that we've got security policies for, or group policies for either the computer level or the user level. And we have two different levels of policies that we support out of the box. One is EC, which is Enterprise Client, and that's what most corporations will end up using out of the box. Then there's the SSLF, which is the Specialized Security Limited Functionality baseline of policies. And typically we only see that in organizations where they really want to lock down the install of the browser. Often government organizations will use this, sometimes banks will use it. But to give you a sense of the different things that you can control and ensure compliance on, let me go ahead and click on, actually let's go to EC Computer. And if I drill into this, you can see the different types of things that you can control out of the box. When I click on this, this is whether we allow users to change the security zones settings in IE9. And what the team has done here that I think is particularly cool is the documentation that they've built into the product. You'll see that for any one of the policy objects that I want to update, I get a good description of it here. And I also get a set of threats and countermeasures. So the threats and countermeasures basically says, if you don't enforce this policy, what's the worst case scenario that could happen? And then we've got the definition tab that allows us to set whether this particular policy is going to be enforced or not. Now you'll see that these are grayed out, and that's because this is the baseline policy that we ship out of the box. If we want to make changes to it, we'll want to duplicate it and customize that duplicate version that we've got. So real quickly, what I'll do here is I'm going to duplicate the SSLF user policy, and I will call this, the name of my company is Fabricam, High Security IE User. And when I click Save, that's going to create a new policy baseline up here. And so what I can do is, in this case, this is the SSLF baseline, and so it's really locked down. And you can see one of the things that we lock down in SSLF is we say that users can't even download a file and save it onto their hard drive. And so we actually want to disable that. We want to enable users to be able to download files. And so if I click disabled and I save that, then what I would need to do if I wanted to roll this policy out, right-click on the policy, say create GPO or group policy object backup, and then it'll ask me where I want to save it. In this case, for the purposes of the demo, I'm just going to save it out to my documents folder, and then it'll launch my documents folder, and it'll show me where that GPO sits, where that group policy object sits. Now, basically what I can do if I want to roll this out across my business is I can take this policy object, I can copy it up to my domain controller, and then from there, I can roll it out to my company. So the IEAK and the Security Compliance Manager are a couple of the IT Pro tools that we ship as part of IE9. If you haven't had a chance to check them out, I would urge you to do so. All right, so that is a quick look at IE9. Back to the blueprint. Now, in a number of the demos that we just saw, we were highlighting the support for web standards and in particular HTML5. We have sort of a two-pronged approach that we take to supporting standards in IE. The first thing that we do is the standards that we actually support in the product, and that's what we saw in the demo. The way we determine what standards we support in the product is based on two things. First, we look at real-world usage patterns of what developers are building on top of within HTML5. Then we combine that with where various specifications are in the standards process. The further they are along in the standards process, the more likely we are to include them inside of the product. We sometimes get the question, why haven't you supported standard foo? Or, hey, Firefox supports spec bar. Why haven't you supported that? And, you know, in the standards game, you don't always necessarily want to be first to support a standard. You can get into trouble when you do that. If you support a standard too early and then the standard gets revised multiple times, you're going to face a situation where you could have a breaking change in the standard that you've implemented in your product. In fact, I think we've got a quick video that shows the dangers of implementing a standard too early. Let me go ahead and play that video really quick.
I have a great idea. I am going to build a site. I am really excited about it.
Starting in the Google Chrome release 4.249, WebSockets are available and enabled by default.
So, what is it?
WebSockets are TCP for the web, a next-generation bidirectional communication technology for web applications. We are the first to implement the WebSockets.
Great. I just used them to build my new site.
WebSockets specification was just updated to 75.
What does that mean?
WebSockets specification was just updated to 76. WebSockets specification was just updated to 77.
Why are you telling me this?
Developers should be aware that starting from Chrome 6.414, the client will talk to a server using 76 version of the protocol, so it will fail to open WebSocket based on 75 version.
My site just broke.
Since 75 version of the protocol is obsoleted and no longer supported, you need to update the server implementation.
Okay, so I just rewrote my site to the WebSocket 76.
WebSocket specification was just updated to 78. WebSockets was just updated to 79. We are making great progress.
Oh my f***ing God.
Important update. We've decided to disable support for WebSockets in Firefox 4, starting with Beta 8 due to a protocol-level security issue.
You must be shitting me.
All right. The last time I did a presentation with this video, I actually grabbed the wrong version of the video that didn't have the words bleeped out. Someone last night was telling me in Switzerland it wouldn't make that big of a difference, right? I was in Japan. It was bad. Anyway, so we support more mature standards in the product. And then for standards like WebSockets that are less mature, we have this thing called HTML5 Labs. HTML5 Labs is a site that allows developers to prototype on earlier versions of specifications. So if you go up to HTML5 Labs now, you'll see that we have prototyping support for things like IndexedDB, File API, and WebSockets. And in fact, WebSockets, I think that we have revved that like 5 times in the past 3 months. So we get this nice balance of more mature standards within the product and then less mature standards up on the HTML5 lab site. We shipped IE9 about 6 weeks ago, and just when the engineering team thought that they could kick back and relax, the boss said, we've got to ship IE10 Platform Preview 1 in 3 weeks. And so 3 weeks into the IE10 dev cycle, we shipped Platform Preview 1 of IE10. The big thing that you'll notice in Platform Preview 1 is additional support for various standards in HTML5. So various things with CSS3, we also support ECMAScript 5 strict mode. Let me just show you a really quick example of what the Platform Preview looks like for IE10. So when I launch the platform preview, you'll see that it's just the browser frame and the rendering engine. There isn't any UI associated with it. And by default, it's going to go to the IE test drive site, where the engineering team has built a bunch of different demos that highlight different functionality within the product. Let me just show you a couple of these. Tweet columns highlights the support for CSS3 multi-column layout. Basically, we've got multiple columns here, and like you would see in a newspaper, we want to be able to flow information down one column, then up to the top in the next, down that column, up to the top in the next. And this CSS3 multi-layout functionality allows us to do that, multi-column layout, rather. So if I add a tweet here, you'll notice that everything is going to move around by one. And as I continue to add additional tweets, everything just flows very neatly from one column to the next. We can auto-show the tweets, and we can cycle the column count. So we've gone from three columns to four. And as we continue adding tweets, this CSS3 multi-column layout ensures that it does so in a nice, clean way without any of the tweets getting cut off. One other demo that I'll show you here really quickly is Griddle. And Griddle takes advantage of the CSS3 grid layout. Easiest way to show this is just to resize the window. Basically, what you see on screen is an N by M grid. And as you resize the screen, the CSS3 grid layout will automatically resize it so that things look the way they should. So as I start to shrink this down, you'll see the CSS3 grid layout automatically updates. And it even changes the look and feel of the UI to optimize for whatever screen real estate that you have. Okay, so we go from here to here. And then as I continue to close it down, watch what happens as I get really tight. It actually changes the UI to a UI that you would expect to see if you were using a phone, for example. So it's a really flexible way of building an N by M grid layout all in HTML5. So that's just a quick look at the platform preview of IE10. And so over the past 40 or 45 minutes, I've given you sort of a crash course in IE9, IE10, sort of how we think about the Internet Explorer business at Microsoft. We had a chance to take a look at the current version and the next version that we're working on. I talked about the work that we did in the platform previews with IE9 and the 23,000 pieces of feedback that we got over the course of our dev cycle. That really did influence how we built IE9, and we want to continue that as we work through Internet Explorer 10. So if you haven't had a chance to download the platform preview 1 yet, I'd strongly urge you to do that. Test it out, try out the new functionality, and start giving us feedback. We're still really early in our development cycle, and the earlier we can start getting feedback from you, the better. Thank you very much for the opportunity to chat with you this morning, and I hope that you enjoy the rest of Tech Days. Thanks very much.